talking without about the introduction of extragenital self-obtained nucleic acid amplification tests for gonorrhea and chlamydia infection in MSM and an STD clinic.
It's a mouthful. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm talking today about our implementation of NAT testing for GC chlamydia of the pharynx and rectum in Seattle, King County, and also about the implementation of self-obtained NAT testing. And I'm supposed to tell you that I'm talking about off-label product use. So as we've heard a little bit already today, among MSM, the rates of extragenital gonorrhea and chlamydia are very high, and the majority of these infections are asymptomatic. This makes them very important reservoirs in infection. In fact, Bernstein published in 2009 that among men who reported only performing fellatio or receiving fellatio, that they had rates of urethral gonorrhea and chlamydia that approached those of men who had had insertive anal sex. But despite these high numbers, overall coverage of extragenital screening remains low. This is data from 2008 STD surveillance report, where in major metropolitan STD clinics, only 44% of all MSM visits were being tested for rectal gonorrhea and 64% for pharyngeal gonorrhea. There's a lot of barriers to extragenital screening, like we've heard about, primarily that culture is very technically difficult and less sensitive than NAT. And NAT is not yet FDA approved, as I alluded to in my disclaimer. However, it is recommended as of the 2010 CDC STD guidelines as the preferred method for extragenital screening for MSM. There are further barriers to extragenital screening that have been cited, including physicians' comfort with anal swabs, as well as the time it takes is more than just giving a patient a cup to pee in. So what did we do in Seattle? In Seattle, we introduced NAT testing around January of 2011, and at the same time, we offered self-sampling for routine screening. We, in contrast to Dr. Radix, we do site-specific screening based on self-reported sexual behavior. And then self-obtained testing was determined between the patient and the clinician's preference. So this represents a retrospective analysis comparing 2010, which was essentially the last year that we used culture for extragenital screening, and 2011, which was the first year that we introduced NAT-based testing. And my primary aim was to identify the increased case finding with NAT. My secondary aim was to evaluate the self-obtained swabs, both in terms of clinical uptake and its performance compared to clinician-obtained swabs. So just to give you a sense of who are our clinic patients at the Seattle STD clinic, in 2010 and 2011, we had about 4,000 MSM new patient visits each year, which represents about a third of all of our patient visits. Mean age is about 36 years, so this is a predominantly white MSM population. They report on average 3 to 4 sex partners in the previous 2 months, and about half of them are receiving free care. The first step in this analysis was to ensure that we did not change our screening coverage. And so this chart looks at the proportion of MSM reporting oral and anal sex and who were screened. So if you look at the pharyngeal gonorrhea line, the denominator there is the number of men reporting performing fellatio, and the numerator are the number of tests for pharyngeal gonorrhea. And the same thing for rectal gonorrhea and chlamydia. The denominator is the number of men reporting receptive anal sex, and the numerator is the number of rectal gonorrhea chlamydia tests being performed. And as you can see, for the extragenital sites, there was no statistically significant difference in our screening coverage rates between the 2 years. I include there urethral gonorrhea and chlamydia because since 2004, we have used the same method of testing for urethral gonorrhea and chlamydia, which is the urine aptima combo 2. We did see a slight decrease in our screening coverage rates for urethral testing. So let's take a look at the results and the test positivity by infection, gonorrhea first, followed by chlamydia. So just to orient you, our red bars here are 2010, which was predominantly culture, and 2011, which was our NAT year. We start on the far left of the screen. We did note a statistically significant decrease in the rate of urethral gonorrhea between 2010 and 2011 from 7.7% to 5.5%. But at the same time, we noted an increase in the rates of rectal and pharyngeal gonorrhea to 9.7% of rectal gonorrhea and 6.5% of pharyngeal gonorrhea. Very similar to Dr. Radix's findings. In terms of chlamydia, this is a very similar outline slide. Red bars, again, are 2010, and yellow bars are 2011. We saw a non-statistically significant but trending that way for urethral chlamydia decline from 5.7% to 4.5%, and a dramatic and statistically significant increase in the percentage of rectal chlamydia from 7.5% to nearly 12%. And similar to Dr. Radix's presentation, prior to 2011, we did not screen for pharyngeal chlamydia. Now that it is available in the Aptima Combo 2, we get these results, and we did find 2.3% of our MSM had pharyngeal chlamydia. Now, because we saw what could have been a secular trend in a decline in the baseline rates of gonorrhea and chlamydia based on our urethral screening, I wanted to standardize and look at the proportional increase of our extragenital testing compared to a urethral test. So this slide, on your y-axis, you have the number of infections per 100 urethral infections. And again, red bars are 2010 and yellow bars are 2011. So if we start on the left at rectal gonorrhea, I would read this slide as there were 88 rectal gonorrhea infections in 2010 for every 100 urethral gonorrhea infections. In 2011, after the implementation of NAT, we had 146 rectal gonorrhea infections for every 100 urethral gonorrhea infections for a percent increase of 66%. Similarly, with pharyngeal gonorrhea, we went from 73 per 100 urethral gonorrhea infections to 127 per 100 urethral gonorrhea infections for a percent increase of 74%. And most strikingly, with rectal chlamydia, we increased from a ratio of 1-to-1 rectal to urethral chlamydia infections to over 2-to-1 for 127% increase with rectal chlamydia. And as Dr. Radix explained as well, following a good presentation there, the proportion of isolated extragenital infections is important. These are the infections that would be missed if we did urine-based screening alone. And in 2010, we had 43% of our extragenital infections were isolated to the pharynx or rectum. And after the implementation of NAT, we increased that to 57%, which is a 56% increase. Let's move on to self-obtained extragenital screening. In the first year of implementation at our site, overall extragenital screening, we did 35% self-obtained swabs, which broke down to 43% for rectal screening and 15% for pharyngeal screening. The second part of my secondary aim was to evaluate the test's performance. And so in this bivariate analysis, I just look at the rate of test positivity for site and infection and by who did the testing. And as you can see, there is no statistically significant difference between who tested and the rate of test positivity for any of the sites or infections. Now, although these should be for only routine screening, I did want to control for symptomatic patients and patients who are contacts to gonorrhea or chlamydia. I was afraid that perhaps physicians would choose to screen these patients as opposed to letting them do self-obtained swabs because they have a higher pre-likelihood possibility of having infection. So I did create a multivariate logistic regression model, and there was, again, no statistically significant association between test positivity and who performed the swab. So in summary, in Seattle, NAT testing increases the number of extragenital cases identified and the proportional rate. In particular, we see much higher rates of rectal chlamydia. And in fact, I have not seen any rates as high as 12% in any of the published literature. Additionally, we found a proportional increase of 56% of just isolated extragenital infections, and these are infections that would be missed by urine testing alone. Lastly, we did have a little bit limited uptake of our self-obtained swabs, but the performance seems to be equivalent. I did a little bit further qualitative research into why we had a limited uptake of our pharyngeal swabs in particular. And the clinicians that I interviewed said, we have this beautiful visual aid on how to collect a self-collected rectal swab, but we don't have anything for pharyngeal swabs. And the clinicians find that it takes too much time to explain how to get to the posterior pharynx, that it's just easier for them to do it themselves. And they also told me that in addition, the patients say, oh, I don't want to do that, I'm going to do it wrong, and I don't want to gag myself. So we have a little bit of ways to go to figure out this issue. So in conclusion, our findings definitely support the 2010 STD treatment guidelines. NAT for extragenital screening should be encouraged, and the more that we can get our labs to be internally validated to use this non-FDA approved device, the more we can rule this out. Additionally, self-testing in our clinic to date has had limited uptake. I think that we have things that we can do about that, and its performance is equivalent, so it has a lot of potential. So what we're going to do in Seattle is we plan to employ a non-clinician, a medical assistant, for routine screening to teach those people how to do their self-swabs and take away from the clinicians a little bit. And then I also am looking at writing a protocol for alternative methods to pharyngeal self-sampling. I'd like to thank all of the clinic providers and staff for their hard work, and particularly my mentor, Matt Golden. Thank you very much. I'll take any questions.
Thanks. That was great, and thanks for staying on time, too. I think we have a question.
Did you use CAPA settings to compare the agreement between self-obtained versus clinical obtained samples?
Did you ask for CAPA? Mm-hmm. No, I did not do a CAPA. I've seen two studies on oral rinse, and they don't look great.
Okay. do you have a small decrease in urethral collection when you implemented self-sampling? Do you have any idea why that might happen?
I haven't figured that out yet, no.
That's going to be part of my question. I'm concerned in Los Angeles. We've done a similar thing in our jail, using self-collected rectal and found sensitively there with actually stopped our urine.
Oh, wow.
So little additional. We actually have community workers who take the throat swab.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered, because of the challenges of trying to explain to people how to take the pharyngeal, we use just simple pictorial for rectal testing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be very interested if you do come up with some good explanation, good instructions of how to take pharyngeal, and if you could share them.
Most definitely.
Have you thought about getting the medical assistant to take the pharyngeal swab rather than explain to the patient?
We're working on hiring this person, so once we'll figure that out. But good idea. Thank you. Anything else?
Can you share with us some of your ideas about how you might improve self-collected oral, or just oral sample collection?
I'm looking at cheek swabbing.
Oh, okay.
Anybody? Thank you.